Welcome to the Young Turks. I'm Michael Shore, Anna Kasparian, our son Brett. We are here. Come on.
I was a last second addition.
T-shirt.
I was in the wings.
Ball cap and ridiculous.
I was in the wings trying to get some free food. I ate like 3 pouches of nuts and some chips.
Brett is here because we wanted Brett here. So don't, I mean, you know.
And Ben is sick.
And because Ben is sick.
That's add Ben is sick. But also because you wanted me here.
Because I wanted you here. And Anna, I cleared it with Anna. Anna said that was fine. So you're here. It's all working out. Anyway, thanks for being with us. We have a fascinating show. We have stories that will make you laugh, that will piss you off, that will tell you a little bit about what went on at the United Nations today as well. Check us out, TYT Live. That's hashtag TYT Live. To me, growing up, it was pound TYT Live, but we'll call it hashtag for now.
Pound TYT Live is the adult version.
That's right. Well, you know, if you really want to be old, and I've said this before in this space, it was tic tac toe board.
Wow.
TYT Live. You know, that before it even had a name, pound, it was that. In any case, we want to tell you a little bit about what your president did today in New York. The United Nations General Assembly happens annually. Leaders from all over the world converge on Manhattan, Turtle Bay to be precise, to the United Nations, a place that Donald Trump, by the way, throughout his presidential campaign, bemoaned and complained about and said that it should not even in some circles exist, that they don't do the job, they need reorganization. Criticize. When he got there yesterday, the first thing he did to the press is he pointed out that, hey, just across the street, I have a very successful building. There's a building that we have. It's a Trump building right across the street. It's a terrific building. So he went in, all about Donald Trump. And I think he'll come out of this, you know, 2 more days. He's not done there till Thursday. He's staying at Trump Tower in New York. Not done until Thursday. But what he did do today was unprecedented, I think. I would say that I adhere and watch and spend a lot of time on boring congressional television. I don't generally look at the General Assembly, but this time I knew that it would be important. This is the first time that this president is facing the leaders of other countries all at once. And it's important because it's his first foray into that diplomatic discussion. And usually the discussions that come out of the United Nations General Assembly are centered around refugees, around working together, about bailing countries out, about healthcare and climate change. And that was not the case with Donald Trump today. Donald Trump took this opportunity to talk about sovereignty, and he said that word so many times. He and sovereignty is another word for keeping immigrants out, if you want to know the truth. But it's also about talking about American pride, American power, and he wasted no time when talking about his new favorite nemesis, and that's Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Here is Donald Trump in New York today.
Now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict. The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary.
Yep, that's Donald Trump talking about he was there. Right at the green marble podium, calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. He did that previously in a tweet. Anna, what do you make of this kind of rhetoric at the United Nations?
Well, the order of sentences in that last statement was interesting because he went from, we will destroy North Korea, right, implying that we would use our nuclear capability against the country should they cease their, you know, experiments with their weapons. And then he immediately follows it up with Rocket Man.
Yeah.
So he makes one of the most serious statements that you could possibly make at, you know, this meeting. and then follows it up with a childish, you know, label that he's given Kim Jong-un. Look, in the grand scheme of things, who cares what he calls Kim Jong-un? What matters is policy, and what also matters is that we have a leader that we trust to be competent to deal with something that is not only threatening to us and to those living in North Korea, but also threatening to our allies. And I just don't feel that he is worthy of that trust because he does not strike me as someone who's competent.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think there's one more thing that matters here too. You're at the United Nations, you're in the middle of this, you know, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but the whole, whether it's a crisis or not with North Korea, we can talk about. But you're in the middle of this and you're shooting diplomacy out of the way.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, so there's no room. Well, you call him Rocket Man and you say, if you don't do this, we're just going to blow up your whole country. That means diplomacy is done. And you saw, when you were looking at it, you saw Nikki Haley, the US ambassador to the United Nations, and Rex Tillerson, who is the Secretary of State, you saw them there. And when you, there are other takes of them where they sort of can't, it looks to me, and I'm just reading their, how they look.
They look concerned.
They look, that's a better way of putting it. That's a nicer way than I was gonna say.
Their eyes shoot down as soon as they realize what he's saying. I mean, not to say that they didn't know ahead of time, but it did feel like those moments during, say, the Academy Awards when the host is doing the monologue and taking pot shots at people in the audience, and then it flashes to some random person and on their face is just written the expression, don't show me, don't show my face, don't show my face right now. That's what it felt like. And then to use that kind of language, it felt not like a throwback to any famous speech that we know of someone bridging the gap between nations, using diplomacy, as you say. It felt like, I think it was like 2006 when you had the leader of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, up there with like Noam Chomsky's book waving it around. and to call him Rocket Man, it feels like he took some kind of like insult, ran it through Google Translator into Korean, then back into America. It felt like the way that Chavez used to call Bush Mr. Danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're a donkey, Mr. Danger. It felt that weird.
Yeah, and there has been this kind of, there's like precedent. You cite Chavez, there was Fidel Castro showing up with a gun. I mean, there are things that have happened at these General Assemblies and in special addresses to the United Nations. But I can't stop thinking about this being the very first time that he has done this and presenting himself to the world, and this is how he's doing it. And that goes to your whole point about trust.
Right. I mean, I had incredibly low expectations for his speech, and he met those low expectations.
Yeah.
So I'm not really shocked by anything. The only thing that is kind of shocking is usually when he says things that are outlandish or worth having some concern about, it's off the cuff. It's not something that's scripted, but he's clearly reading from a prompter there.
That's a great question. I want to ask you. He's reading from a prompter, but I think he saw Kim Jong-un and he said Rocket Man. I don't think.
I was wondering about that.
Like, I don't know.
Was
I'm
that
guessing.
Written in the script?
Right,
you know,
right.
Who knows? There's no way of knowing, but it is clear that he is using a teleprompter there because whenever he does speak off the cuff, he has the vocabulary and communication skills of a third grader. But the other thing that I wanted to quickly mention is, you know, this notion that he's a great deal maker. And I'm not talking about him sitting down and trying to be diplomatic with Kim Jong-un. I'm talking about him making a deal with China in regard to, you know, the trade and you know, the resources that China gives to North Korea. So I see what he's doing there in that speech. He didn't mention China, but he's implying that China's the issue here. They need to, China itself needs to impose sanctions against North Korea. Okay, then you can use diplomacy in that context to convince, you know, Chinese leaders to stop their friendly relationship with North Korea. I mean, that's where, you know, your good deal making could come in and be very useful, but he's not really a good deal maker.
It seems like his strategy is, I'm not the head diplomat. The head diplomat's a Secretary of State or my UN ambassador.
Right, soon be your Secretary of State because people are saying that Tillerson's tired of this whole deal and dealing with Trump.
Right, and it seems like if I were to apply my knowledge of Donald Trump to my interpretation of this speech, it could all be translated into Rex, hold me back.
Right.
Like, I am gonna rattle my saber. I'm gonna call the guy Rocket Man. I am just as petulant as the boy king of North Korea. And I am going to be that person that Un can identify with, and then Rex can go in and kind of patch things up, even though Rex has been undercut at every turn since he took.
And the president leaves no room for diplomacy. So if you're going to sort of pave the way for Rex fix this or Rex do this, by saying we're gonna blow you away and by demeaning the president or the supreme leader of North Korea in that way, you're undercutting the ability of the Secretary of State and the diplomatic corps to do anything here, but not just here,
right?
In Syria, the Iran nuclear deal.
That's right.
It's all there's a contagion about this that is unprecedented, it seems, right now. And then this speech, like all the speeches that Donald Trump gives, campaign speech, right? This is what worked on the trail. If you're standing in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, you're going to say, we're going to blow that guy away, Rocket Man. Well, not with that accent, right?
Rocket Man had such a positive connotation, didn't
he? He's burning out that fuse up there alone.
Okay, yeah, that's Brett proving that he knows what Elton John is saying in that song, because nobody else does, burning up that fuse.
Yeah.
I think about Family Guy.
Is it burning up the fuse
out here alone? But nobody knows what that is.
That's true.
Right, it's one of those lyrics that nobody knows. I thought Rocket Richard, Maurice Richard of the Montreal Canadiens, which most of you probably
think.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I knew you did.
What if using Rocket Man is the most appropriate deep metaphor he can think of? Because Un is alienated out there just trying to get a connection with someone. Maybe Trump, he's like bringing out his chops as an English major.
Could
I fade into the background of this graphic more?
Look at
the
that.
Answer
yeah,
is no, no.
That's pretty good.
The answer is no at all.
The frustrating thing about Donald Trump is you don't hear the detractors. You don't hear Republicans saying about that this is irresponsible. You don't hear it enough, certainly. And I know that people are waiting for that, and I'm confident that that will come. It did not come today. Lindsey Graham, who you'll recall, Donald Trump gave out his cell phone number during the campaign. Donald Trump made light of his candidacy, which was worthy of being made light of, but he's somebody who Donald Trump has taken to task at different times. Lindsey Graham goes on television. This is what he said.
Every military expert says there is no good military option.
They're wrong. There is
a
military option to destroy North Korea's program and North Korea itself. He's not going to allow President Trump the ability of this madman to have a missile to hit America. If there's going to be a war to stop him, it will be over there. If thousands die, they're going to die over there. They're not going to die here. And he's told me that to my face.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that was earlier this summer, we should point out. But this is a consistent message from Lindsey Graham, that told me that to my face. And he is buying into it. He said, when he told it to my face, I didn't challenge him.
Yeah, well, I think he's buying into it for a specific reason. And I don't think that Trump leaving out any room for diplomacy is an accident. And what I'm about to say sounds conspiratorial. It's speculation. I want to be clear with our audience. This isn't based in, evidence and reporting. But it's my view of what's going on, because there's a story that we're about to cover after we finish covering this regarding increasing taxpayer money toward the military. And right now, there's a good deal of fear-mongering happening among our lawmakers. And it has to do with Iran, it has to do with North Korea, it has to do with, these dangerous refugees that are trying to come into the country. And I don't think, my perception is, they're not escalating, the rhetoric or, antagonizing the enemy without a reason. There's a reason, and the reason is to convince Americans to support funneling more of our taxpayer money to the military, even given the fact that we know without a shadow of a doubt that there's a tremendous amount of waste going on at the Pentagon. And so I don't know, maybe I'm giving Trump too much credit, because that would indicate that he's actually strategizing.
Well, yeah, which is always tough to do, but it does bring up the question, what you just said, of this whole North Korea story and whether or not it is the media, that we and the media as a whole are responsible for the escalation of this thing to a certain degree. That there's so much hyperbole out there now about this, that there was not really a threat. These two nations were not at the brink of war, North Korea and the United States. And now, because of the constant, he's testing them. Yes, there are problems with South Korea and North Korea. I'm not making light of the global implications of it and the situations here. But it wasn't as big as it is now. And it wasn't as close as it was now. And you didn't have leaders saying that they're going to do this.
Well, the story wasn't as big as it is now because we didn't have leaders escalating the situation when we don't need to be escalating it, right? There was no, sorry to interrupt you, there was no conversation on cable news where one of the options was to destroy North Korea. Because the fact of the matter is, North Korea is full of people who are being oppressed, who are innocent, who are doing nothing wrong. They are unfortunately being, they've been taken control by a dictator, and it's been like that for some time now. And so to just, nonchalantly talk about destroying North Korea and murdering innocent people is absurd. I'm sure would break war crimes.
Absolutely right.
And also our allies would be negatively impacted by that as well. And so it just shows either Lindsey Graham has a complete misunderstanding of how things work and what that would really entail, or he does know and he's just the type of person who doesn't care about the ramifications.
He loves the military, Lindsey Graham. He loves the fact that he was a judge advocate general. He loves all that. And it's always been part of what he sells. But I think the point you make is absolutely spot on. I mean, we've been led by fish that have been swimming by the bait for a long time. Mm-hmm. And now we have one dumb fish who's like, oh, there's a piece of bait, and he bites into it. And then this happens, right?
Yeah.
And then the media covers it and voraciously. And I think that's what happened.
I don't want to get into a land war in Asia. Or, that's from Princess Bride. But I don't want to get into a land war in North Korea. It feels like Kim Jong Kevin McAllister has been spending the last 70 years booby trapping that. It's going to be like Home Alone.
Yeah.
I think that'd be terrible.
Yeah, it would be terrible. And he is trying to seduce this into happening to some degree, or at least, this is the campaign Trump again. I mean, I talked about it a second ago. This is the guy who loved, this is what he sold out in America, and this is what they bought. And so he'll keep selling it.
But remember that strange moment when Trump kind of humanized Kim Jong-un along the campaign trail, where he's like, I get this guy. He's got a powerful dad. He's trying to define himself. He's a pretty smart, sharp cookie or whatever.
Right. Because they're the same person.
They are the same person. That's what's so terrifying about it.
Right.
Is that they'll do the same thing back and forth until something terrible happens.
And their father willed to them an empire. And they've almost both bankrupted it at different times and seen it rise. And the comparison is unbelievable.
I'm going to regret bringing this up because it's wonky and I don't know. You guys probably won't care. But I don't.
Is this about the DNC fraud lawsuit?
No. It's every time we do stories about potential nuclear war, I always think about Kenneth Waltz, who's a political scholar, and he has this theory about nuclear weapons and how arming every country with nuclear capabilities is actually not a bad idea because most people are rational, they're rational actors. And if you know that your use of nuclear weapons is going to be met with nuclear warfare, then you're much less likely to use those weapons.
Right, but that's when the nature of warfare was considered widely as such, where there were rational actors at the heads of states that had their people's best interests involved.
That's right.
And it wasn't when someone could go just get their hands on one if they were more widely available. It's the same argument with guns. If you get them in the hands of the wrong folks who aren't responsible to anyone but themselves and their wild notions.
I just want to have I want to have a talk with Homeboy and see what he thinks now. Like, what do you think about your theory? This is a long time ago that he wrote about this theory, but it's just fascinating to me.
Listen, nothing's changed. Kim Jong-un's been doing this for a long time, as you said, and now he's got somebody reacting to it. And he knows the threat has been implicit for a long time, too. He just hasn't had somebody enunciating it, especially at the United Nations, as Donald Trump did today. Let's talk about Donald Trump and the military a little more. Donald Trump went to France, and he, while there, celebrating, by the way, an occasion, the 100th anniversary of the United States entering World War I, at that time, the Great War. And as is sort of customary for these kinds of commemorations, there was a big military spectacle and parade there in France. Well, Donald Trump was so taken with it that he decided and said today to Macron when meeting with the French leader that he wants to do one of those himself. And this is, this typical Trump, right? He thought this was great. It looked great. It's consistent. We'll discuss this in a moment with things that Donald Trump has said in the past. But here is what, if we could put the graphic up here, this is what Donald Trump said about this. It was really so well done, but I came back and one of my early calls were, I think we're going to have to start looking at that ourselves. So we're actually thinking about 4th of July, Pennsylvania Avenue, having a really great parade to show our military strength. And of course, the first thing I thought of is July 4th weekend, he's going to be at the White House. No.
No.
Right? He's going to be in Bedminster. He'll be out of town. He'll be in the Hamptons. He'll be someplace else. But what this speaks to, and this is consistent, this whole idea, where do people hear these things and see these things, right? I mean, you see it in black and white films from, I mean, this is, of course, the great celebration in France, but you see them black and white films on the History Channel of people marching up the Champs-Élysées, people, what I mean by people, Nazis, marching up the Champs-Élysées to the Arc de Triomphe when they took Paris. You see these sorts of commemorations in middle 20th century Europe. And Donald Trump sees this, is excited about this, and wants to go ahead and do it. As a matter of fact, he, for his inauguration, asked, and this is a commemoration of the 100th anniversary of World War I and our entering it, something totally worth commemorating, perhaps, right? When Trump sees this sort of thing, and he wanted to do this at his inauguration.
He
asked the military. He got a 20-plane flyover. He loves this stuff, but it shows these are the strains of an authoritarian. This is not just, oh, this is America proud. This is scary stuff, the kind of stuff that an authoritarian wants.
And also, if you know, anyone in our audience doesn't buy into the authoritarian angle, which I think is a really great point, also keep in mind that Trump argued that it makes sense to ban transgender military members because they're too costly. Obviously, studies have already indicated that is not the case. Taking them out of the military and replacing them would be insanely costly. But you have the resources, or you're willing to spend the resources on a military parade, which is completely unnecessary. But you're not willing to help pay for the medical bills of men and women who are willing to serve in the military just because you don't like their gender identity. I mean, just think about that for a second.
Yeah.
It's so enraging. And the fact that, you know, I don't know how many of his supporters would want something like this, but those military parades ain't free. That's our taxpayer money going toward something that makes Donald Trump feel good about himself, and that's it.
But this is gold buildings guy. I'm gold buildings guy. I put gold on and in my buildings.
Right.
You think of it as an unnecessary expense. He thinks of it as something that he has to do for branding. This is all a brand initiative for Team Trump.
That's right.
And it's worth it to him because of that. It fits right in with his taste. But it is about, you know, and it's, JR, I mean, come into this. This is Make America Great Again, right? This is the coming home from the war, the 40s, this is the kind of thing that Donald Trump would latch onto, irrespective of price.
So you read the piece of his statement on it, and I want us to also play the full version because it feeds more into what his motivations are, and also bringing up his plan to bring things into the inauguration. When he planned to bring those military vehicles and members into his inauguration, he asked for pictures from the Pentagon or whatever military source he needed to ask. He says, can you guys send me pictures of things I can use? Not with any kind of flow to it or reason behind it outside of what's going to look good at my inauguration.
Right.
That's military. It's a military slant to it to show my power. So I don't know if we have this video ready
to
go.
We do, yeah. This is Macron and Trump.
And pay attention to full reasons for why he's saying it after seeing what France did.
I was your guest at Bastille Day, and it was one of the greatest parades I've ever seen. It was 2 hours on the button, and it was military might, and I think a tremendous thing for France and for the spirit of France. And people don't know what great warriors they are in France, but when you see that and you see all the victories, it was a tremendous thing. And to a large extent, because of what I witnessed, we may do something like that on July 4th. In Washington, down Pennsylvania. I don't know, we're going to have to try and top it. But we had a lot of planes going over, we had a lot of military might, and it was really a beautiful thing to see. But I came back, and one of my early calls were, I think we're going to have to start looking at that ourselves. So we're actually thinking about 4th of July, Pennsylvania Avenue, having a really great parade to show our military strength.
One of my first calls when I got back was to plan a parade.
And so again, he was shut down for the inauguration thing. So he's like, here's a way I can still do it and make it seem like it's for everyone else but me to show our military strength, our might. What does that have to do with your inauguration, number one, our military strength to who? Who's infiltrating your inauguration for this show of power? It's all about showing power. And oh, France did it. I was so impressed because I'm a 10-year-old at a parade. And I got giddy. I was like, oh my God, I can do this too.
Right.
And after doing it, after wanting to do it, I have to do it better than you.
Yeah. The arrogance to do it on July 4th in the middle of impeachment hearings.
What? I love parades though. Honestly, I love them. Have you ever been to a basketball, a football? I guess not a basketball game because those are indoors, but a football game where there's a flyover?
Yeah, that's cool.
I think it's super cool. And that's what I thought was awesome about when he asked on his inauguration. It was like, can I have tanks? And they were like, no, 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 those will tear up the streets. When a lot of tanks actually disperse the pressure a lot more than cars do. So it is less of a footprint on the actual street.
Can't we just get him like a G.I. Joe kit? Have him.
A CGI, just CGI. Distracted. Just show him a scene from a movie.
Exactly. He'll be, oh, that was fantastic.
But you know they were like, listen, we know what you want. We know what this idiot wants. We'll give him a couple planes. We'll do a flyover. He'll be happy.
That's true. And that's how you feel they appease him constantly,
yes,
right?
That's exactly
that
the point.
These people just to give him a little bit of a run with it. Can you imagine, you know, US presidents are allowed and required to plan their own funerals. So part of what they do is they sit down very early in their presidency, and they can amend it at any time to plan their state funerals. Every president does it. Can you imagine what his plan is entailed?
I mean, that is,
you know, I mean,
the amount of money that's going to go into that funeral. It'll be
the flyovers and the military and the might and the everything.
And if you're at the funeral, you have to cry and fall over his casket. But does that sound like someone else?
All these things sound exactly like that. Yeah. All the images that are summoned are the images that you associate with dictatorial regimes where people on pain of death are forced to, oh my God, like freakishly flail about in the streets.
No, it's unbelievable. So I thought of that when I heard this story. It's gotta stop, man. It's gotta stop.
It does feel like all of his ideas could be an episode of The Apprentice, though. Like planning the parade does sound like a challenge, and who's the project manager? And as much as it sounds like he's thinking big, he just ends up thinking so small.
Well, I'm proud to say that my dislike of Donald Trump predates his becoming president or candidate, so I never watched The Apprentice because I couldn't stand him for most of my life. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about what Anna previewed, the military budget. We're going to talk about refugees. We have a great show ahead, and stay with us. Hashtag TYT Live, and you can join us on Twitter. Welcome back to the Young Turks. Michael Schur here with Anna Kasparian, Brett Ehrlich, and J.R. Jackson discussing a few things that have happened in New York, a little bit of military in Washington. We're going to get to that. However, I want to invite you to go to hashtag TYT Live and join the conversation about this show on Twitter. I want to read some of the tweets that you would find there, which kind of ruins it. You don't really need to go if I'm going to read them, but go anyway. Chris Duran says, the U.S. population to the world. This is the U.S. population telling the world, President Trump is defective. We're trying to return him, but Russia won't give us the receipt.
It's funny.
Saying, Teely Quark says he was embarrassing at the U.N., obviously. Donald Trump just ruined everyone's favorite Elton John song, that's not my favorite Elton John song, but I understand why people would think that.
What's your favorite Elton John song? The public wants to know.
You think so? I would say Burn Down the Mission, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Crocodile Rock is actually the answer.
Is that right? Philadelphia Freedom?
Nope.
The Tony Danza song? Isn't there one?
Yeah, it's Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Candle in the Wind? No.
Right.
Hold a candle to Crocodile Rock.
Now, Bart, Kyle, who works with us, we talked a little bit about the lyric that Brett showed off that he knew, burning out his fuse out here alone, a reference on the isolation of fame, which could also cause someone to burn out by living in the limelight. So that's a little bit of information you would not have known.
And get faded.
Right. Go in next break. We'll read your tweets. I love doing it. There's one that we didn't get to. The panel keeps dancing around. This is Brian. Panel keeps dancing around equating Trump with dictatorial regimes and authoritarians. It looks like a duck and quacks. Yes, it does. I don't think we danced around it. By the way, you can do that work yourselves. But I think we danced right into it, Brian.
Is it He's a ductator.
He's a, thank you.
Obviously, by that logic, he's a ductator.
Well, you can't have a military parade unless you have a well-funded military. And the United States Senate made sure that that was what Donald Trump was going to get. Donald Trump asked for a lot of money, and he got a lot of money. The U.S. military budget, the Senate backed a defense policy bill pumping $700 billion into the military. Here's a little breakdown, because I'm terrible with numbers. Approved by the Armed Services Committee by a 27-0 vote in late June, the overall Senate bill provides $604 billion for core Pentagon operations, such as buying weapons and paying troops, and another $60 billion for wartime missions in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and elsewhere. Trump's budget request sought $603 billion for basic functions and $65 billion for overseas missions. So they shortchanged him $28 billion. But what's $28 billion when you don't have a parade yet? Wait till you see next year's request. This is, you know, what struck me about this, listen, these bills happen all the time. They're very, very contentious most of the time. This year's it wasn't, 27-0 in the Armed Service Committee. And I think this is the type of thing that members of Congress don't like voting against, because it can be used against you on the campaign trail. And point of fact, this money is necessary to keep the military going. What isn't necessary is the second part of the number, which is all those missions. And that's another story entirely. But in this argument that the Republicans are making about healthcare, they're saying that single-payer healthcare is the wrong way for America to go. Mm-hmm. This is unchecked, single-payer, $700 billion of expenditure. This is single-payer. This is what it looks like. So we can pay for our military and our defense in a single-payer kind of way. We can damn well do it for healthcare. If the right to defend your country is a right that we're all born with, so too is the right to remain healthy throughout our lives.
They're both to keep us alive.
Right.
They're both to keep us alive, but there is a significant amount of waste in the military. And it was something that Trump criticized when he was campaigning, something that he claimed that he was going to stop when he was campaigning. But he is only adding to that waste. Of course, he wants to do that military parade, which would take taxpayer money. Right. So that's an example of waste. Our taxpayer money shouldn't go to that, especially when, you know, people in Congress and the president himself keep making arguments against universal health care. And every once in a while, of course, the topic of Social Security comes up. And, well, you know, how is it going to remain solvent? How are we going to do it? How are we going to be able to make these Social Security payments? How about you don't spend an additional $700 billion on the military, which is incredibly wasteful. So look, why do I think it's wasteful? A lot of you already know that money goes to private contractors, when in reality, we don't need to pay these exorbitant fees to these contractors to get things done in the Pentagon. But just last December, if you guys can remember, okay, I didn't mean to rhyme there. The Washington Post.
Could have said November.
Last December, the Washington Post published an incredible piece regarding the Pentagon and how they tried to cover up a study that showed $125 billion in waste. Okay, so this study, please go back and read it. It's incredible. Pentagon buries evidence of $125 billion in bureaucratic waste. So this study is done, and you know, the Defense Department could have saved this money by actually looking at the results and doing something to cut the waste, cut the bureaucracy. There's obviously money going to things that we don't need in the military anymore. And instead of doing that, the Pentagon realized, oh wait, if this becomes public, then Congress is much less likely to increase funding to the Defense Department. And so let's just bury it, pretend like it doesn't exist, and continue on with this unnecessary waste. Okay. In that same piece, Trump is quoted as saying he's going to stop it, right? He's going to come in, oh, it's wasteful. Look at what the Obama administration has done. You know, they should have done something about this. He's supposedly going to do something about it. He gets elected into office, and then what does he call for? More funding to the Defense Department instead of doing what so-called fiscal conservatives claim that they want to do, which is cut spending and cut waste in these specific departments. Anyway, it's just frustrating, you know. We pay taxes so our government can actually take care of us, and they do the exact opposite. They fearmonger about Iran, completely unnecessary. We got into the details of the Iran deal yesterday and how they are complying. There's no reason to, you know, escalate tensions tensions with them, the fear mongering about North Korea, all this stuff is going on, or the escalation of conflict with North Korea through Trump's rhetoric. That's all being done on purpose because they want more money for these private contractors, and that's it. Who cares about your Social Security? Who cares that you've been paying into it your entire life? Who cares about your health insurance and your health care coverage? Who cares about, you know, affordable housing and making sure that people aren't living on the streets? We got to fund the military because these private contractors got to make money. That's where our taxpayer money goes to.
Yeah, I mean, well put. Additionally, I would add that if you're taking $700 billion from the American taxpayers for the military, where we know there's waste. And, you know, I should say, if there is single payer healthcare, socialized medicine in this country, there's going to be waste. That's just what happens. There's waste everywhere in government, but it's still better, right? So if you're looking at this defense bill, you're going to see a ton of waste. But the VA, there's no talk about the VA here. And again, this is a blanket bill. It's unfettered. It's untouched by amendments. Amendments that could have talked about North Korea. There's nothing in here about the ban on transgender in the military. So I think that's, you know, probably a good thing. Though the Appropriations Committee is going to get this, and they're going to talk about where the money's going to go. But there's no talk about the VA, and that to me is a that's one thing that's glaring. And Trump talked about it on the campaign trail the entire time.
You know how he works. This is what always sticks out to me, and I've said it a few times already. Mick Mulvaney, months into the administration, when he was pitching their budget and saying things he wants to cut, when he was slashing everything, when it went down to the Meals on Wheels, that was one of the headlines that made the Meals on Wheels thing, that he was ready to cut because no one really needs that. There was one line he said where he said, I can't force a construction worker in Ohio that has nothing to do with this single mother's her entitlements or her children's education. I can't make him pay taxes or his tax money to go to her because F her, right? But then I can make everyone who's disagreeing with these wars we keep starting, or disagrees with the waste that we do in building more war machines and funding more war companies to do these things, I can force you to do that. And he said it openly. I said, why can you force me to do that? What if I raise my hand and say, no, I don't want to fund your wars anymore. No, I don't want to fund your friends' companies anymore. I don't have that say anymore. Yeah. But that Ohio worker, that construction worker, has all the right to say, you know what? F that mother in Kansas. Screw her. I don't care. I don't want money going to her. Why does it work that way?
And by the way, this is a perfect, you know, illustration of a point that keeps coming up on the show, where while the government takes our taxpayer money and uses it toward this type of waste, right, to make private contractors wealthy, they distract us by attacking that mother living in poverty. Mm-hmm. They distract us by talking about, oh, the others, they're trying to come into the country and take your resources. They distract us with the wall and Mexicans and Muslims and black people. They distract us and try to get us to attack one another while behind the scenes, this kind of story, I mean, sure, major news outlets are covering it, which is good. But do you think that this is a topic of discussion among most Americans? Hell no, it's not. Because this is not the kind of story that gets talked about over and over again in the media. Charlottesville, I understand, you should talk about it. But this is the kind of stuff that really goes on that Americans should be outraged about.
Yeah, all those military threats are nameless, faceless, and scarier than a mom, you know? And then another rhetorical aspect of this is it seems to me like the only way we can get the government really to fund anything is in terms of it being a war.
Absolutely.
So the war, the military spending, right, the most obvious one. But whenever they declare war on stuff,
it's the war
they declare
on
war on drugs.
Right.
That's not the same as the other wars you're fighting. But in order to communicate their message so everyone can really understand that you're being attacked by something, it's the war on drugs, it's the war on poverty. Maybe rhetorically, when it goes to trying to get healthcare changed, it's the war on sickness, or we're attacking them,
right,
bomb sickness.
It's branding.
Shoot sickness in the face, or something like that, something more aggressive and affiliated with military get military exercises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exercise has to do with healthcare. I'm saying a branding initiative.
Well, right. I think we need more.
And that's what Trump can do, right?
Yeah, and that's it.
We just need more lawmakers that would want, you know, that type of policy and would want to use that kind of branding in order to get, you know, beneficial policies passed for Americans, as opposed to this kind of, you know, increase of funding toward the Defense Department. But I do want to just quickly note that, look, this is not an issue that, or this isn't just a criticism of those on the right, because I mean, you look at the number in the Senate, the number of votes, I should say, and it's 89-8, meaning that there are Democrats who voted in favor of it. And look.
Well, I should point out just politically, this is the geeky part of it, and before you continue. A lot of Democrats voted against it, I mean, a lot for it, because there was no amendment process, because the Republicans couldn't do worse things to it with their majority. So leadership said, hey, let's just push this through, because then they don't get North Korea, then they don't get transgender, and that goes away. So in a way, it was a defensive posture that a lot of Democrats took too. I don't mean to take the air out of your balloon, because what you're about to say is really true, because it goes on.
Yeah, I think that there are other ways to fight, you know, other proposals that Democrats think are damaging to transgender military members and some of the other more disgusting proposals that have been pushed for by Trump and his cronies. But, you know, we need fighters. We need people in government who look at this kind of money and realize, no. My constituents, the people that I was voted to represent, need to be represented. And giving contracts to private military contractors is not serving their best interest. Fear-mongering about, you know, these potential threats is not serving their best interest. These are people who are losing their homes, who are being evicted from their apartments because rent is going up and they can't keep up with the cost of inflation because wages are stagnant. These are real issues that Americans are dealing with, right? So how many people need to live on the streets before these lawmakers wake up and realize our taxpayer money should be used toward taking care of our own citizens?
Right, the triple cynical way to look at it is that as it is now, it's confusing. You can attribute blame to certain people, and that's enough for the equilibrium not to sting as much. And if you're cynical about in the wings, in the shadows, which defense contractors or healthcare professionals are making money off it, I mean, the status quo ends up maintaining itself just because it's so confusing and difficult to affect change in any effective way.
Which is true. We're going to take a break. We talked a lot about that. We have a couple of important things that I do want to get to. We all do, especially about the horrific things that have happened to the people of the Caribbean, having to do with these storms that have come through. And we can talk about climate change. Hashtag TYT Live on Twitter. We'll see you in a minute. Hi, welcome back to the Young Turks. Michael Schur, Brett Ehrlich, Anna Kasparian, and J.R. Jackson. I am going to read some of your tweets, because that's what I get to do when I present these stories. And we're going to talk about some of this horrible devastation that's happening in the Caribbean. But before we get to that, here are our live tweets. Matthew Reed, I haven't read any of these, so if they're bad, it's because I didn't read them. Conservative economics is not about balancing budgets or reducing spending. It is about socializing losses and privatizing gains.
That's right.
Which is correct and deep and true. I'm a derpy panda, which is the reason I couldn't get that name is because you took it. What we call waste, others call it profit, and our country values profits over everything else. Right, but there's also, it's both, but that's a good point. Daniel Pareja, the worst part is that mother living in poverty in Kansas voted GOP and will almost certainly vote GOP again. There's no proof to the contrary, right? I mean, that seems to be the way we're going. Yuri, the party that missed a $2 trillion math error from Mulvaney doesn't get to criticize a plan that will actually help people. That's true. Luis Figueroa, too bad the war on Christmas didn't get as much funding. Yeah, that's your war on thing.
Yeah.
They're the war on morons.
That was great.
Thank you. Vance, maybe
that was
we should.
Really great.
You like it?
Yeah.
T-shirt,
keep them. Let's keep them.
Oh, keep me. Vance, maybe we should declare a war on climate change and try and trick these idiots into fighting the fossil fuel companies. Yeah, the war on climate change needs to happen, and there's no better segue, thank you, Vance, to our next story. There are so many storms brewing in the Caribbean, and I think it's important that we talk about some of the devastation. Hurricane Maria, which reached hurricane status category 5, went back to 4, and now apparently is picking up. This I can't confirm, but before we went on there, picking up to 5 again, wreaked its havoc on the island of Dominica in the Caribbean. It's a small island, about 78,000, 80,000 people. And it, you know, these islands, like last week, Antigua and Barbuda that suffered the same fate, especially Barbuda in Hurricane Irma. It's happening again now. This is Roosevelt Skerrett. Roosevelt Skerrett is the Prime Minister of Dominica, and he said last night after being rescued from his home, he said, "So far, we have lost all what money can buy and replace," which is unbelievable. I mean, that's everything. "My greatest fear for the morning," and this was last night, "we'll wake to news of serious physical injury and possible deaths as a result of likely landslides triggered by persistent rains." It's an incredible thing because we don't know if his premonitions came through, because all communication to the island as of this morning was cut off. They had no way of communicating with the outside world. If you're in Florida, you can drive to Georgia, you can drive inland, you can do all sorts of things. When you're on a small island in the middle of the Caribbean, there's no place you can go. Of course, it's easy. We talk about climate change. I feel like sometimes we're the only ones to talk about it. We talk about it so much. Easy to blame it, right? You know, there seem to be storms. We've gone through J, K, L, and M, and we've had storm after storm after storm. And I wanted to find out if this was related to climate change. And what they're saying is that yes, obviously it's related to climate change. The changes that have happened to our climate have made these storms more devastating, though their frequency. And we'll hear this from Wayne Drash. Changes in our planet's atmosphere did not cause hurricanes Harvey or Irma, and presumably Maria. But the consensus among scientists is that the effects of climate change, such as rising sea levels and warmer oceans, made those storms far more destructive than they would have been in previous decades. And so thus the rainfall levels and wind speeds during tropical storms are increasing, says Wayne Drash. A 7-inch rise in sea levels over the past century adds to the resulting flooding threat. Mm-hmm. So everything that a hurricane brings, nobody is saying that climate change causes hurricanes, because before the climate changed, make the climate great again. Before it went, when it was great, it was not, we would have hurricanes.
We always had hurricanes, like this, right? Yeah. So anyone who uses that argument is missing the point. It's not about, all of a sudden we have hurricanes now. It's about the severity of the storms. It's about the amount of rainfall. It's about, the rising sea levels, and also the moisture and the heat that again exacerbates the situation. And so, back in the day, you would hear about storms like this, and they would refer to it as what? The 500, once every 500
years. Once every 500 years storm. Yeah.
Right, and now we have major storms that cause severe damage to our country as well as other countries every year. I mean, it's going to get worse, and we're going to continue ignoring it. I mean, we pulled out of the climate agreement, Paris Climate Agreement.
And when you look, Brett, I mean, we want to say something about that. I mean,
it's just we're not doing anything to cover our bases in the event that all the scientists are right.
Right.
And so every action it seems that we are taking is leading us further away from their admonitions, mm-hmm. instead of closer in line with their recommendations.
And we're the only country in the world that debates this,
right? Right.
That's the thing. Only in America do we debate whether or not this is happening and why, right? To protect the fossil fuel companies, right? To protect the fact that we are part of destroying the environment. We're not alone destroying the environment, but we are really powerful to help fix it. And all the starting point to that is acknowledging it. The starting point is getting back into the Paris Climate Accord and joining the world community on this thing rather than pulling back. And, on the day that Trump address the United Nations, this wasn't a big topic there, right? Mm-hmm. That's the place to talk about this.
Well, yeah, and I don't know. The central challenge in getting people to affect policy that addresses climate change issues is that it's not a pressing threat. It's the kind of thing that when you have a scientist stand in front, they say things that are very sciencey, and that's disengaging for the audience. And then they say, here are models that we've played out over dozens of years. Right. That's further down the line. And anything that people want to get done that get you to vote on involves some kind of pressing issue, such as this year we can make this much money if we open up this field to be drilled or fracked. So that is the pressing issue that gets folks more excited about making changes. And the difficulty here is we are looking at things that are more intense because of higher sea temperatures. That's the one thing they teach you in weather and storms about hurricanes, is that they feed off warmer waters. That's right. You need look no further than where the hurricane goes from category 3 to category 4. It does that over the warm waters of the Gulf, and it loses power over the land, right, or over colder water. That's just how it works. And if you're raising the temperature of the water, and barring any like drastic increase in temperature aloft, you're going to have huge ass hurricanes. And the trouble is everyone's trying to shake these folks and say, this is the pressing thing. Mm. This is what it looks like. This is what it feels like. The sea levels have always risen. Mm-hmm. But again, and I think this was covered last week on the show, where it was like folks are saying this is not the time to talk about it.
It's right. So frustrating. It's like the United States is the Cersei Lannister in Game of Thrones. And like the White Walkers are coming, but we're in complete denial about it, right? And it's so frustrating to.
This is
to,
right.
I know. Right. I'm sorry.
I pretend I know what she's talking about.
But you know, I watched that show and I'm like, the White Walkers, it's climate change. That's what they are. Anyway, but look, I hear what you're saying about it being not being a pressing matter for most Americans, which is why I think a lot of people here are able to just kind of like brush it under the rug and pretend like it's not an issue. Because here's another thing. There's another pressing matter that, you know, I think takes priority over doing something about climate change, and that is the issue of jobs. And I remember having, this is anecdotal, but I remember having a conversation with a young guy on a plane, liberal guy, who's an engineer on an oil rig. And so politically speaking, he's liberal, right? We talked about a variety of issues, but when it came to the issue of climate change, it was interesting because he acknowledged it, but he doesn't want to do anything about it because that means that he's got to go find another job. He's in a very cushy position right now working for, I believe, Exxon. And when it comes to feeding your family, that's always going to take priority over doing something that's going to benefit the planet. But here's the thing, if you're worried about national security, if you're worried about the cost of food, if you're worried about the refugee crisis that you know we're dealing with in the Middle East, all of those issues will become exacerbated moving for sure. forward. And we see it get worse every year.
Well, you know, one of the knocks against this, and we're going to have to move on in a second. I mean, one of the knocks against this climate change as an issue has always been that it's a tomorrow issue, and tomorrow issues don't play politically, and they don't, like Anna just said, people vote their pocketbooks. People think about where their next meal is coming from, where their next job is, where their security is. It's a tomorrow issue, except that now it's a today issue. And that is why running into this wall of attitudes that comes from the other party on this, the party that's standing in the way of these things, and Donald Trump and his administration are standing in the way of this, it's really, really difficult. Because it is a today issue, and it's not the same type of thing as it used to be. I wish we could talk more about this, but we have one more story that I want to get to today. The Trump administration and the U.S. Geological Survey, by the way, you should look and see where they lead you when you want to talk about climate change. They'll lead you right into a dead end. But the one other thing that we can say is that another denial that the Trump administration is putting into play is a denial about the positive impact of refugees in this country. And as Trump is at the UNGA and he's talking to these countries, refugees and the treatment of refugees is a subject that always comes up. He's going to be there Wednesday and Thursday. He's going to get an earful from a lot of these other leaders about the way that Americans treat refugees. But there is a study, and I want to bring this up, that found that refugees contributed an estimated $269 billion in revenues. And that's not $269, it's $269 billion in revenues to all levels of government between 2005 and 2014. That's 9 years through the payment of federal, state, and local taxes. Overall, this report estimated that the net fiscal impact of refugees was positive over the 10-year period at $63 billion. $63 billion is exactly the number that Donald Trump asked for to go into Afghanistan. The Senate voted for to continue wars in Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq. So $63 billion is what refugees are creating in this country. Though the Trump administration is rejecting those numbers,
yeah,
saying that there's a net effect to that. They're saying under the refugee proposal program, the federal government brings tens of thousands of entrants into the United States on top of existing illegal immigration flows who are instantly eligible for time-limited cash benefits and numerous non-cash federal benefits, including food assistance through SNAP, medical care and education, as well as a host of state and local benefits. So they are saying that they're a drain on mm-hmm. the American people, on the American economy. The facts prove otherwise.
The facts do prove otherwise, because since they're refugees, they're more likely to take jobs that average Americans don't want to take.
Right.
And I know that people are in denial about that, but that is what happens. They do pay state taxes, federal taxes, sales taxes if they're in a state that has sales tax. So they do contribute to the economy, and it's a significant amount. And so if the argument is, No, they're going to drain our resources, that's just a flat out lie. And the Trump administration tried to hide this study. They tried to, you know, completely pretend like it didn't exist. And it reminded me of what Nixon did with the Schaefer report back when he was president. During the Nixon administration, you know, he really wanted to ramp up the war on drugs. He wanted to go after people who were using marijuana. And so he commissioned a study that was headed by Governor Raymond Schaefer at the time. So Raymond Schaefer goes in, has this commission, they do the study, they find out that marijuana is actually not a public health concern. It's actually not something worth wasting resources on and adding to this war on drugs. And Nixon didn't like the results because he wanted to discriminate against black people, right? He wanted to go after Mexicans who were caught with possession of pot. So he's like, oh, Schaefer report, okay, yeah, that's great. Let's move on with our lives, okay? So it's just what Trump's doing with this information from this study just reminds me a lot of what Nixon did. And in this case, you are playing with people's lives. These are people who not only, I mean, we're thinking about them as numbers. We're thinking about like, oh, what's in it for us? Like, keep in mind, these are people's lives that we're messing with.
Right. And then, I mean, when they talk about refugees and they talk about the negative effect, they also talk about this looming threat of terrorism, that there are folks that are slipping through the borders. But you have a net positive here that you could apply to some kind of betterment of your screening,
right,
double secret probation, you know, procedures that you have put in place to vet who's coming into the country. So not only are refugees a booming business,
right,
but they pay for the upkeep of that business,
totally,
if you are earnestly meaning what you are saying, which is that we want to make sure that the people who are coming in are properly vetted. You have a budget for that, and it's baked into,
right,
refugees themselves.
You've turned a profit. Isn't that what all you ever want to do? They've turned a $63 billion profit. You'd think the refugee business would be something they would be jumping on because of that alone. And listen, I mean, these stories are connected. You have a report from scientists saying what's going on with the climate, and it's being tossed aside by the Trump administration. You have a report saying that refugees create $63 billion in profit for this country, and the Trump administration is saying that's not true. That doesn't count. Keep these people in check, folks. Thanks for being with us. I'm going to be back with Anna tomorrow. Brett and Anna are going to be here for the second hour, where they'll have fabulous stories that I'm not really qualified to talk about, apparently.
That's true.
Go to TYT Live with the hashtag in front of it and be part of the conversation. Thanks.